Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and we've got a guest that I know you're really going to enjoy. If you are a lover of dogs, which of course those of you that are regular listeners know that I am, you're really going to enjoy the guest that we have today. Kevin Behan is my guest. He has a book that he's put out that's titled Your Dog is Your Mirror. It's the emotional capacity of our dogs and ourselves. And Kevin, I'm just absolutely delighted to have you as a guest. What is the breed of dog that you have pictured on the front cover of your book? He looks like a wise old shaman.
I know. He looks very all-knowing, doesn't he?
Yes, he does.
You know, be honest with you, the book publisher picked out the photo from their collection of artists or, you know, who they use. I don't have any input on that, but it looks to me like he's some kind of lab cross, but particularly intense, incisive-looking one.
Yeah, just all the wisdom. Again,
yeah.
Just reminded me of an old, old shaman. And his muzzle, his eyes have just such a depth to them, and I wondered if he might be part lab, but he looks like he's a mixture, like you said.
He's
just a beautiful, beautiful dog.
Right.
Now, Kevin, you're a man that is going to be sharing quite an interesting story with my listener, but you yourself have been training dogs, well, my goodness, almost all of your life.
Right.
And you're very much involved in dog rehabilitation, which to me is very significant. And your dad, which you'll be able to tell us about, who was a pioneer in training security dogs outside of the military, and he made it a career. I mean, he had his own kennels and everything else. Quite a fascinating story about your dad. But you decided you were going to do things differently, and now you have a 60-acre farm in southern Vermont. You have what you call the natural dog training method. I was just absolutely thrilled when I read this book because there are so many animals, either they've been mistrained, not trained, or abused in some way, and most of the time they'd just be put to death because people didn't know what to do with them, and they were afraid of them lots of times. Mm-hmm. This was just absolutely wonderful to read your material. Tell us about your dad. Let's get a little bit of background, how your life evolved into the positioning of knowledge and wisdom that you have attained after all these many years.
Well, thank you, Donna. He was a great dog man, and maybe one of the first to apply the idea of the wolf pack hierarchy to the relationship between a dog and their owner in the domestic context. And I just grew up in this rugged world of dogdom where we had military dogs, and he was the first, after World War II, his military service as a dog trainer in the canine corps in the Army. He then became a professional dog trainer, and he worked for the CIA, some missions with them, and he pioneered the use of police dogs in the Northeast and hunting dogs, bird dogs. So I just grew up into this world. It was like growing up in a circus. There were dogs, there were birds, there was horses, there was everything going on, and I lived kind of a farm-like existence. Yet, the most powerful people in the country, if not the world, came to his door to get his training and insights. And he was quite a wonderful speaker, and he had a philosophy that went with it and a very incisive mind. And he taught me to think very critically, which eventually caused me to think critical of what we were doing there, because certain things didn't make sense. When I started, I didn't have any questions, but certain things didn't make sense. Dogs would do things that just didn't fit this linear model of one dominating another, mm-hmm. or the idea that they learned in terms of causes and effects, that it was a logical. When we used to work with clients, I mean, I would debrief them for hours trying to find out when the dog learned this, when he learned that. But as I got more and more aware of what was really going on with dogs, I realized that something very profound was missing, and I set on a quest to find out what that was. And I'm grateful to my dad for setting an example of questioning first principles. When he started in the dog business, everybody thought wolves were bloodthirsty killers.
Mm-hmm.
He taught me that, no, that's not true. And nature, he had a real sense about nature, and he had just all these wonderful sayings. He would say things like, a dog only trusts his nose, he doesn't trust his eyes. And all that stuff was really true, and it got me very equipped to see the nature of the dog in a way that ironically caused me to part company with him as far as our methodology went, and then what that had to do with an overarching philosophy. But I'm grateful to him for giving me that kind of underpinning. And the other part of the upbringing that was important was I saw dogs under extremes of behavior, and especially, you know, just taking a dog away from its owner and boarding it. We ran a commercial boarding kennel, hundreds of dogs, and seeing a dog go from this sweetest little thing in the owner's lap down in the admitting office, then you bring him up to the kennel, and 2 hours later you go back and he wants to rip your face off. You see
that's a little disconcerting.
Yeah, you see a different way of looking at dogs. Everything became normal. I started to understand, of course he would, and this is why, and I started to see a logic and a sense to everything dogs did, but it wasn't a human logic. And it would always throw my human logic off kilter, so I learned not to trust my human logic. I was like an animal. Don't trust your eyes, trust your nose. Find the common sense in what they do. And eventually I did, and it was the concept of a group mind based on feelings, that they know you by what you feel, not by what you say, do, or think. And this then started to explain all the quirks of what they do and then the amazing things that they would do, you know, like earthquake detection, and now they're detecting illnesses in people and detection. And everything started to add up once I started to see it in terms of an emotional model.
I can really relate to what you're saying, and I know that those that are dog lovers out there listening, even if you have cats or other animals, this holds true for species,
all animals.
Across all animals, because I've done interviews with trainers of horses that have recognized this. And, of course, the movie The Horse Whisperer went a long way towards making that awareness for a lot of people.
Right.
But there still is a mentality that it's like, well, it's us instead of them. You know, we're superior to them and all this stuff. There is a compatibility that is between an animal and the person that is considered the owner. And having had a number of dogs through the years, my husband and I love Scottish Terriers. Scottish Terriers are, as most terriers are, they're extremely independent. We often call them a cat in a dog's body. And they have their own minds. They know exactly what they want to do, what they don't want to do. They're very intelligent dogs. But they are so smart. We've got a little Scotty right now, that if anything is going on with me, the bond is especially smart, strong with me. But he will read me like a book.
Right.
And he will not let me out of his sight if he knows anything that's going on. And I've had so many experiences myself, as I know many of my listeners have, of telepathic situations with animals. And maybe they're picking up on a combination of things. It's your body movements. It's your emotions. You could be dead still, and they still read you like a book.
Exactly. Yeah.
They read you. They've got you. They've nailed you. And when a dog is not in harmony with the person that has them, I think that's when you've really got some problems. I got a kick out of this one story where you're talking about working with a psychiatrist.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. You've got to share that story. It was a woman and her dog in Manhattan.
Oh, right. I was walking. I met her, and I'm walking alongside her, and I'm tall enough I could look down on her as we're talking, and she's giving the rundown of the dog. We're on the way to a dog park where she's going to let the dog run free. It was a private dog run with gated, and she had a key, and there's a cast of characters on a regular basis, the other doggies and owners. As I'm walking along, she's describing this and that, and it struck me looking down, and she had a coiffed hairdo that was layered in a certain way, and blonde on orange, interwoven, interesting color pattern. And I could look down in juxtaposition to it, and there was her dog. It was a gorgeous Briard, and he had the same fine, delicate hair, the same blonde weaving into orange, weaving back into burgundy, and the same flounce when her foot struck the pavement and his foot pad struck. They got the same shock. It was like the same ripple going through both of them. And I said, wow, that is too, the concordance there is too amazing. Mm-hmm. And then I realized, this was the incident that first got me thinking like this, that everything she was saying had nothing to do with her dog per se. It was really about what she felt about this person and that dog, how she wanted to be treated. And I realized she was really telling me about herself. She thought mm-hmm. she was describing her dog, but she was really telling me about herself. And then we get to the park, and sure enough, her dog was actually doing that stuff. She wasn't reading. She wasn't inventing this behavior. He was actually performing it. She was misinterpreting it. But what he was doing was conforming to her physical way, her personality, and then her actual deportment and manner. And that started me thinking that, wow, dogs really reflect their owners even more than physically, which, mm-hmm. you know, everyone can kind of see that in a general way. It'd be interesting to put 10 people in a room and 10 dogs in another room and see if you could sort out who is who.
Mm-hmm.
That would really be fascinating. And sometimes it's the complete opposite. You know, the bulldozer mafia hitman has a little tiny chihuahua you never in a million years would connect. But that's the side of himself that he's repressing. You know, he represses the sweet part, and he's the killer on the street, but he's got to indulge his little puppy in his arms.
Yes. People are fascinating with their animals. They really are.
Oh, it never ceases to amaze me or fascinate me.
And absolutely. I just love it. Now, you mentioned something a moment ago that I think is very significant, and that is, it is finally coming to the forefront that training dogs, I mean, we've been training dogs to do so many things for so long, and they are such a significant part of our lives, those of us that are involved with them. But whether you have a bird, whether you have a cat, it doesn't make any difference. It could be a ferret for whatever. It really is that relationship. There is that communication that goes on. It's a bond that develops if you are a good caretaker of the animal. But it's the reading of cancers, the reading of diseases. And in your book, you talk about a dog that, let's see, was his name Cruiser or no?
Oh, yeah, Cruiser, yes. Yeah.
Yes, and how they had a house guest. And he would not leave that house guest alone. He stayed with that house guest, and later they learned that house guest had a terminal illness.
Right. I know. It was sad, and yet it just shows you the level of attunement. I think what happens when someone is really profoundly ill, and actually I want to speak about what I've discovered in terms of, you mentioned the word telepathy,
yes.
is what I'm adding to the discussion isn't telepathy. I call it empathic communication.
Mm-hmm.
So it's another, you know, I believe that the telepathy is going on, but my contribution to discussion is the other end of it, which is a body awareness, a kind of a knowing that's subliminal. So I think mm-hmm. what happens when someone is profoundly ill is there's a part, their deepest part of their mind is really in touch with their body in that context. They're aware of this on a deep level, and they're actually in harmony with their body. It actually makes it easier for an animal to be close to us when we're ill. Because when we're healthy and we're vibrant, we're always radiating our ego and our personality. That's a barrier between us and an animal. But when we're vulnerable, they really feel that barrier is lowered and they can cross over. And I think this is why animals are very attuned to people that are ill, people about to have a seizure, you know, the insulin detection DAWs that's happening now. It's amazing. Keeping tabs on a young child when they're sleeping to make sure that their blood sugar doesn't go dangerously low.
Mm-hmm.
So what I discovered was this empathic transference that is, amazingly enough, going on between prey and predator. This is why the dog emerged from the wolf, because the wolf hunts by empathic transference. He feels mm-hmm. he feels what his prey feels. He's mm-hmm. the only chance he has against the prey that the wolf hunts, which is a large, dangerous animal like a moose or a muskox, buffalo, and they herd up into a defensive formation. The only chance he has is to overwhelm the vulnerable one, the one feeling vulnerable. So he's most attracted to the one that's going to break. And
right.
The whole group aligns around the one that can feel which one it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's not just feeling it, it's actually knowing what to do in harmony with everybody else in the group. And that, I believe, is what begat the dog. And that is why they are so attuned to us. And I think we co-evolved with them. I don't think we domesticated them, per se. I think we co-evolved mm-hmm. with them. And, you know, some of the anthropological research and archaeological research is starting to hint that maybe humans became humans because of the domestication of the dog. And it might have happened a lot longer, even 100,000 years ago, rather than the 10,000 to 15,000 years that it's been typically assumed.
Oh, yes.
Now.
I think so, animals have been incorporated into that association for years. I loved your story in your book, and you covered many different species in your book, not just the dogs, but about the whales, the Aboriginal whalers of New Zealand and killer whales. And I had heard this story before, and I think that there was another Native American coastal group that did something similar. But this is an amazing story. You need to share it with my audience.
Yeah, in the Bay of Eden, a gentleman from Australia emailed me and corrected me. It's Australia rather than New Zealand. But when I was researching it, first I thought it was a Discovery special. New York Times did a piece on it, and I picked up New Zealand when I did further research. But it could be Australia, the Bay of Eden. You get conflicted reports, but I want to be fair to Australia, and it could very well be there. But at any rate, it doesn't matter. And this is why I like your mention of the word shaman. The Aboriginal whalers wanted to hunt the great whales that were far out to sea, but they were too far out for their little boats. And the killer whales wanted to hunt the same whales, but they were too big. And they could dive down deeper and stay down, and the killer whales couldn't pressure them. So the shaman lit a signal fire, and he limped feebly between one fire to the other on the beach, beseeching the spirit of the killer whale to help him get the great whale. So somehow it clicked, and they start herding the whales into the bay where the human whalers could harpoon them. And then the Aboriginal whalers would leave them overnight in the bay for the killer whales to eat the tongue. So it's called the Covenant of the Tongue. The most amazing thing, and this documentary is amazing, was this was picked up and carried on by Western whalers into the early 20th century. And there's actually children of those captains who survived or who are still alive and are in the documentary actually talking about the orcas who would tell them where the drowned sailors were, bring bodies to shore, keep some of the sailors safe from shark attacks when there was blood in the water. So it's just an amazing covenant that went on between this aquatic group hunter and the Aboriginal human group hunters. So I believe that really gives us a model for how the wolf became the dog, and I call it the shaman hypothesis, because I think around a fire one night they just beseeched the spirit of the wolf and said, you know, they met in their dreams, and somehow, you know, there's an ancient wisdom between early man and animals that we don't even have a hint of. It's just a tiny bit of it survives to this day with native traditions and what little we know of how they just saw themselves as part of nature. We see ourselves as so distant and detached from nature, but early man didn't. And they had a rapport with animals that we have forgotten. I think that's the best explanation.
I think that's so true. I'm recalling something I read just recently about the Dakota Sioux and how they never really looked at any of the animals in their environment as their enemies.
Exactly.
And if there was a bad snow, bad blizzard where they were starving, they knew the animals were starving, and they had learned how to hunt so that they wouldn't be attacked, let's say, by the wolves. Because, we're just another form of animal, that's all. Mm. And it's just very interesting when you go into that and when you can get into the thinking and understanding that we're all part of this planet. And
right.
When we can be in harmony, we're going to do ourselves a lot more good than when we're in disharmony and we're in a destructive patterning. So that's one of the things I really, really liked about your book.
Oh, I remember along those lines, I heard a story once of an Indian talking to a Westerner cowboy or whatever, and He said, you know, the difference between the white man and the Indian is we consider the snake our brother. So if we were to surprise a snake, he's not going to bite us. But you consider the snake your enemy, so if you surprise him, he's going to bite you. And I thought that was really interesting. They didn't have that fear and loathing that the Western mind acquired from our assault on nature. We really wanted to control nature. And I guess that's the difference between someone in harmony is they're not trying to control nature, they're trying to tap in. Mm-hmm. Whereas the Western mind wants to dam the rivers and control everything. And that's one of the problems we're seeing in the domestic dog these days, if we could talk about that at some point.
Sure.
This over-control of the dog's nature, trying to harness it and not even harness it, but just dam it up and control it, and that's leading to a lot of the problems. And that reflects a lot of the ways that we deal with children today, too.
Oh, very much so. And that was a point that you brought out in your book. Your dad had a very strong attitude about discipline. And he thought that that was very, very important. And in your book, you talk about nature conforms to the power of desire. And in working with dogs, your dad often felt you had to be consistent in what you do. And I know with my Scotty, he's got his routine down, he has his body clock, he knows what's going on, and he doesn't like it when things are changed too much.
Right.
So it's just the terrier. But he adapts. He will adapt to certain things, but there are certain things he doesn't want to adapt to, and he lets you know about that in no uncertain terms, like his morning walk. Thank you, it's 9 o'clock. Whatever you're doing, put it down and let's go.
Right.
You know, and that's just something light. I really do have a sense of appreciation for dogs because they evaluate things so clearly. They know whether they really want to be with you or not, I think. I've had experiences where I've said, I'm going to sit down in the middle of a bunch of them and let's see just what happens, especially with puppies. And even puppies have an idea of whether they like you or not.
Oh, yeah. They can feel whether you're open or not. I think the first level of assessment is they feel whether or not you're emotionally conductive or not. And it's sort of like if you walk in a room, and we have that too, but we often override it with our thoughts. And we say, oh, I should be friendly to this person. I should act a certain way. And we kind of tune out our innate knowing.
Mm-hmm.
But dogs, they don't go by the surface. They're like little children. They go by the core. That's what they care
about.
Yes,
they do. They really see through. And one of the things I've shared with many people, and my dog taught me this, if you have a dog and you've got a good relationship with that animal and it doesn't like someone and its normal nature is very open and outgoing, pay attention. I've had dogs let me know that something wasn't right with somebody, and I say thank you, and I stay alert. And by golly, every single time there was something in that person's character that I would find out about later that was not, as I would say, kosher.
Isn't that amazing? That's why I wrote the chapter, Dogs Are Never Wrong.
Mm-hmm. And by golly, it was right on the money.
Yeah, no,
absolutely.
I put my money on the dog
right
every
on the money.
Time. Right.
Yes, absolutely. Now, you bring out something about the German dogs. Your dad loved Dobermans and had a tremendous regard for Germans and the way that they could read animals. Go into that. You call them naturalists because they really understood their dogs. But your dad got upset, and you got upset, too, with the way dogs have been bred and how things have changed. So let's go into that a little bit.
Yeah, you know, the German model is really based on the nature. It's interesting in Europe where land is scarce and everything has been developed over, of course, thousands of years. They have a deeper appreciation for nature. It's interesting. You know, they really savor every little green plot of grass and those communal areas, and they're way ahead of us in that regard. We kind of think of nature out here as limitless and we can do with it as we wish and not worry about it. There's always a greener pasture. But in Europe, they had to be much more conservationist from a long time ago. So they really appreciated the nature. And when I started working with German dog trainers, I mean, all they talked about was the nature of the dog and how he evolved from the wolf. Everything we wanted police dogs to do was because of how wolves hunted. So that is what flipped the paradigm for me, where I started to really pay attention. It wasn't enough to get the dog to do it. It was how he did it.
Mm-hmm.
And the more the more love he had for the work, the more he would do it, the harder things got. Or if things went off the rails, given practical things never worked the way they're planned, the dog could adapt innately and still perform as needed. And so that was like the missing piece in my training, was to shift from the pack theory to what I call the group theory, which is, unlike what my father thought, that if everybody does what they want, there's chaos. I learned if everybody does what they most want, everybody gets what they want most. That's actually how the wolves function. Everybody wants that moose. And if everybody wants that moose and works together, everybody gets what they most want. And that's actually how nature is organized, according to the power of desire. And we can see this play out anytime two dogs are looking at an object. Whoever wants it the most gets it. And it makes total sense to that other dog. And there's a kind of a group ethic that dogs are really showing us, and we're not getting it when we put it into learning by positive versus negative experiences, that theory of learning, or a dominance hierarchy. The real way that they organize is, who wants it the most, I'll follow you. So it's sort of like a basketball team. The last minute, one of the players really wants that ball. He's got a hot hand. He just wants that ball, and that's the one who should get it. And he's the one who will most likely do what we need, what the team needs to have done. So that shifted my whole training approach from going by this rigid, autocratic, trickle-down, I'm in charge, you do what I say, versus this inspire the dog through the force of desire, and that would inform him. I couched my training in that term. So if he was in control of everything, if he did what I wanted, and that made him feel great, made me feel even better, because it worked even when things were going crazy. He could still do it.
I think that animals can teach us so much, as obviously they have taught you, taught your father. And I think that it's wonderful that you were able to come through such a significant environment that your father provided, and were able to expand on that knowledge into a dimension that is absolutely marvelous. Now, your book, Your Dog is Your Mirror, is really so well done. You cover so many different variables. Now, you have your own kennels, and you work with people, but your website, what is your website so people can go and find out more? If maybe they're having a problem, and they go, gee whiz, what would you recommend? Where do they go, Kevin?
It's called naturaldogtraining.com. Naturaldogtraining.com, all one word. And they can Google natural dog training itself, or they can Google Your Dog is Your Mirror, and it'll zip right over there.
Well, I commend you. I think that this is an absolutely fabulous book. And I, again, enjoyed the different creatures that you brought in information about, the whales. You've got stuff about cats in here. But the understanding that we're dealing with intelligence here. Animals, just because they cannot speak as we do, although a lot of people are trying to get them to do that, that they cannot speak the way that we do, that's all right. They talk and communicate in their own way.
Exactly.
And it's because of people like you that we can get a better understanding of our own special little people we have.
Well, I'm grateful for that acknowledgement. And what I like to say is, fortunately, dogs don't think like humans. Otherwise, they would not be the most social animal on the face of the earth. So they feel what we feel, and that's how they know us, and that's why they're so adaptable. If we want something, they want us to have it. That's actually how they align with us.
Mm-hmm. So no, they are just totally, totally amazing creatures, and our lives are so much richer because of them. So for those of you that love dogs as much as I do, if you love animals, period, and you want to have a better understanding, this book is awesome. Your Dog is Your Mirror, the emotional capacity of our dogs and ourselves, but also there's good stories in here about other species as well. Again, Kevin Behan, I thank you so much for being with me. His website is naturaldogtraining.com. Fabulous book to add to your library. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break. We'll be coming back in a minute with more good things to share. Don't go away.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Telephone lines are now open. If you'd like to give me a buzz, I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. I want to let you know who is going to be sharing the airwaves with us this week. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking with a delightful, delightful lady, and she is a person that is replacing a guest that I had listed, Tony Richards in Australia. Something came up, and he is not able to be with us, but we are going to be having a delightful woman in his place, and I've not had the opportunity to change this in the listing. It's Dr. Melody Ivory. She calls herself a virtuoso of change, and believe me, I think she is incredibly inspiring, and we're going to be talking with her and how she decided to change a career at a time in her life where other people would consider it such a risk. She took the risk, and she is successful today because of that. So we'll be talking with Dr. Melody Ivory. And then on Wednesday, we're going to be talking with a woman, Suzanne Baer, and the book is called The Inventor's Fortune. A gentleman invented a particular item that is still in use today. It was patented, and that patent was to be passed along to heirs. As it turned out, this person didn't have any children, but there were nieces and nephews. The battle was on for a fortune from an inventor. So we've got that coming up. And then, of course, St. Patty's Day is coming up on a Thursday. Wade Nichols, we're going to be talking about the Glamis Cure. Yes, so we're going to be getting into a wee bit of the green on Thursday. And then on Friday, Dr. Lundell is going to be my guest. This is a cardiologist of very, very high respect and positioning. And he's done, I've just thousands of heart surgeries. And his book is The Cure for Heart Disease. So if you know of anybody that has a heart condition, they need to know that according to this cardiologist, there is a cure. And he's going to tell you about it this coming Friday. So we've got a great lineup of guests. And anytime you want to find out who's coming up, once in a while there might be a change, but you will find all of the information when you go into bbsradio.com, Station 1, The Donna Sebo Show. click on the little square that says show information, and all the scheduling for all of the guests will be right there for your reading convenience. And, of course, the shows are archived for you. Now, for those of you in the state of Washington, I do want to let you know, by the way, don't forget, you can call me if you want, 888-815-9756. I'll light up your life with some intuitive insight. For those of you in the state of Washington, I will be doing an appearance at the Emerald Spiral Expo at Kent Commons on Saturday, March the 26th. So I encourage you to come on out. It's wonderful. It's oriented towards the family. I will be doing readings there. I'm going to have an abundance of books to share. So come on out. We even have a special drawing. Come on out, say hello, and just know you're going to have a wonderful day. And if you want more information about this event for the Emerald Spiral Expo, go to emeraldspiral.com. That's emeraldspiral.com, and you'll have all the details. You can also go into my website, check out the newsletter, and you will find the address, information, and contact, etc., right in there as well. And that's at DelphiInternational.com. Let's talk about traveling for a moment, because before we know it, it's going to be spring break. I know, maybe I'm getting a little bit ahead of the curve, but isn't this year going by like the wind? There goes. That's, you know, this month, that month, the other month. It just is passing by so fast. It's hard to realize that we're almost through a quarter of the year already. Well, that means vacation time is going to be coming up. And one of the most favored ways of traveling is by plane. Well, I came across some information about an open-door organization. And this is something that relates to people that have disabilities, or sometimes maybe you have a particular physical need. You don't have to be elderly to have a concern about getting on and off, you know, planes, things like this. And he said, there's no reason that a physiological limitation should spoil a trip. Now, Eric Lipp is the executive director of the Open Doors organization, and he had some tips for people that are traveling, and maybe you've got someone that you're going to be traveling with that has physical limitations. And he said, if you need some help in your traveling, here are some tips. When airlines are aware that you are going to have special needs, they will issue a pass that allows non-travelers to go past security and out to the gate to assist or to meet a traveler that's coming in that has special needs. So what you need to do, though, this isn't something that's done automatically when you go to the airport. You need to call whatever airline you're utilizing ahead of time and leave plenty of extra time to fill out the paperwork you're going to need to fill out at the airport. So where normally it might be 2 hours, they tell you to get to the airport in advance. Make it earlier than that because you're going to have these forms to fill out. And even if you're not traveling, you need to bring your photo ID. Remember, this is security they're very concerned with. Also, airline clubs are now selling day passes to lounges, and they have snacks in the lounges, soft drinks, and, of course, it's very comfortable to stay there. So if someone is having some problems, if they are disabled and they would like to be in an environment that's more comfortable for them, they can get a one-day pass for these lounges. All they have to do is go to the desk, the airline desk, and find out where you do it. Now, one of my favorite airlines, and I've been traveling for years, is Alaska Airlines, and they really go the extra mile when it comes to helping people, especially here in the Seattle, because their base is out of Seattle. But they really help everyone that needs the extra help. The staff is just terrific. And there are some other airlines that are good, too, but I'm especially fond of Alaska. And there is a group that trains the airline employees so that they can help. So understand, don't get upset. I've seen people at the airport upset because they didn't feel they were getting the right kind of attention. Well, excuse me. We're dealing with millions of people going through airports every day, and you need to have enough courtesy to call the airline in advance and be patient, especially when it comes up to the holiday periods, because they're just inundated. So if you take the extra time to get in touch with the airlines about your needs, you're not going to have a problem. And then travel involving outdoor activities and camping. there are products such as the award-winning Eureka Freedom Tent. And you can go to www.eurekatent.com. And it's zipperless. It's designed to make outdoor activities accessible to people with special needs. So whether you're traveling by plane or you want to be out in the wonderful national forests that we have to visit and experience nature in its own special way, understand that there's so many options today that were not available before. This is absolutely marvelous information, and I think it's terrific that we can do things for ourselves that, a few years ago just was not possible. So I encourage you to reach out and help those that maybe need a little bit of extra help when they're traveling, but also realize that if you have a loved one or a friend that is hesitant about traveling, they just need to know there are many options available to us today. All we have to do is ask and find out. So I wanted to share that information about that organization. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. All I need from you is your first name or your initial. Of course, I'd like to know where you're calling in from. Call me at 888-815-9756. B.C. Forbes said, if you believe in yourself, your neighbors, your work, your ultimate attainment of more complete happiness is right in front of you. It is only the farmer who faithfully plants seeds in the spring who reaps a harvest in autumn. Those words are so wise, and they are so true. We need to understand that we have to invest in ourselves. And however that investment is made, the seeds that are planted are the ones that are going to reap results for us. And if you plant concepts in your head that you're not capable of doing things, or you're never going to have opportunity, or you beat yourself up all the time because you feel like you're not worthy, eventually you are going to demonstrate that in a way and manner that is not necessarily going to be too pleasing to you. So remember, when you invest in your mind, in your attitudes, when you say, I'm going to be mindfully present with where I am and who I am, and I want to be comfortable in my own skin, when you can do that, you are going to be a shining example for so many other people. And that doesn't come with a college degree either. That's a do-it-yourself, real-life, living demonstration of who you are. So just keep that in mind. And know that no matter where you go, you always take yourself 100% with you. So the blame game isn't valuable if you're really honest with yourself. So being mindfully present, invest in yourself so the seeds of result are going to bloom in a way that is going to be very, very meaningful and special to you. Donna Sebo here, 888-815-9756. I have some numbers that I wanted to share with you today that I thought were a wee bit interesting. Truffles. For those of you that love to cook, I know you've heard of truffles. Well, they can cost hundreds of dollars a pound. And in Europe, you'll hear about all of the special hunts that are done. They use pigs, sometimes dogs are trained to do it, but they really go on a hunt for these wild truffles. I did not know that there is 2.5 tons of native black and white truffles that are sold in the Pacific Northwest. I had no clue. These are sold in Oregon, and this is natural. They have these black and white truffles in Oregon. Who knew? I didn't. They have this huge festival that goes on in the early part of the year. It's the Oregon Truffle Festival, and it's held in Eugene. And I would imagine that 2.5 tons is shipped around the world, but they're called black and white truffles. And also, they said the annual production in tons of truffles that are harvested annually in France, 100 tons. And again, there's all different types, but they are very, very expensive. In fact, they slice it so wafer thin. The one little truffle goes a long way, but has a very, very specific kind of a taste. And so the Europeans just absolutely love their truffles. Well, apparently, the people in Oregon that are aware of this truffle market, and they only put out 2.5, tons of this, well, they're thinking that if they can duplicate their growing conditions, they're going to be able to one day be able to export, to grow actually 100 tons of this truffle, or truffles, I should say, because they're black and white, grow these and ship them around the world. What an income that would bring into the state of Oregon. It's thinking outside of the box. How can we take what we've got and be able to make it better so that we can let other people benefit from it and we benefit from it economically? That's invention. That's what business is all about. We're taking a break. Don't go away. We'll be back in just a moment.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
He sees a large open area of valley ground covered with a thick green grass. In the open space are many other children and animals. All kinds of animals. And all of the animals are talking. He can understand every word they are saying.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life, ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling. And the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and we're going to be taking our first caller of the day. And if you want to call in, 888-815-9756. Hi, caller. Welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling in from?
Hi, Donna. It's Pat in Connecticut. How are you?
Well, hi, Pat. And give me the location in Connecticut that you're calling from.
New Haven.
New Haven. Well, I have to let my audience know that you sent me the recipe, not the recipe, but the candy that your sister had a recipe for that you made. And I was so glad you just sent me a small sample because I probably, if I had a regular amount, wouldn't have been able to get out my front door. That recipe was so good.
I know. It's evil.
Oh, no, it's not evil. It's deliciously yummy. And it's better than a potato chip because you can't eat just one piece. It's a type of brittle
right.
that she sent me. Oh, it was so good. Whew.
Well, I'm glad you liked it.
Oh, very much so, and I so appreciate you doing that. All right, let's take a look, Pat, at the things that I'm looking at in my mind. The first thing I'm looking at is you are going to need to pay attention to detail, and there is something about your living and your lifestyle that is changing. And I really feel that you're trying to work out the details at this moment. And I'd say don't be in a big rush on this. Give yourself the opportunity to really think through what you know you need to do and then initiate the change that you feel, or changes, I should make it in the plural, that you feel that you need to make, because they're going to be made. And if you think it through carefully, it will all fall into place very easily and very simply.
Okay.
So it's important for you to work with the details. And I think you pretty much could have everything in order as you want it to be by the end of March.
Okay.
But it's taking care of the details now. What question do you have for me today?
Well, this is sort of complex. I'm going to try and make it as simple as possible. My son was seeing for over a year a physical therapist slash healer. Mm-hmm. And he developed a good rapport with him, and my son has not had many male role models in his life. And this doctor told Terry that he had hit some financial devastation. He had to give up his dog. He lost his home in Vermont. He was commuting here weekly to do his work, and that he was leaving and didn't know where he was going, and that was the end of him. Mm-hmm. I just heard in church Sunday that he is even closer to us. He's one town over practicing with the same company, and I'm stunned. And I feel he sort of betrayed my son. I'm very confused. I don't know what to do.
Well, I don't think you can do much of anything. And I think that the man actually was telling the truth in certain areas, but I believe what was occurring is that he was going through a particular crisis in his own space. And so he needed to remove himself from the sense of pressure that he was going through. So I don't think you need to be anxious about this at all. And that sounds cold, I know.
No.
But
no, I understand.
Yeah, your son was not betrayed by this man. This man did not do anything wrong here. But there may have been that point where he just had to make some choices, and I think he made them.
Okay. No, that's why I'm calling you. You're not cold. I knew you would really get to the truth. But I think, should I tell my son and have my son resume with him?
No.
Or does
no, I would stay out of this. I would stay out of this. Your son is rebuilding sections of his life. This gentleman helped him to understand certain things, and there is a subtlety, too, that the man, I think, was realizing that he was becoming a crutch for your son, and he did not want to do that. So he was going through some issues himself. I think that he did your son a favor, and it was actually kinder in some respects for him to have cut it off abruptly than to try to pull it out. One, he wasn't in a position where he really wanted to do that, and it was not fair to your son and to some others as well for him to do that because of what he was going through. So I think that you just need to let this go. Don't try to tell your son anything, and if he learns about it, he'll be able to work through it. It's not a bad thing that happened. Not at all.
Right.
How old is your son?
He's 30, and I even wondered today, maybe he needed this break and he needs to go on to someone else. Now, he has some paralysis, bowel and bladder, from breaking his back.
Mm-hmm.
So he needs to, he's just beginning to, in his mind, be more mature about seeking help.
Mm-hmm. That's always when you are at any age, I don't care what the age is, but especially when you're younger and you have had a debilitating physical situation occur like this, the body has to be retrained. So I think that it's important for him to be involved in physical therapy and to take a proactive approach regarding himself because it will make a difference. But it is. It's a tremendous trauma when you go through something like that. The body has all of this memory of the trauma in it, and to be able to balance it out and to work with it so it's retrained and work with the internal organs, all of this is a lot of work. So he does need support. He does need support. And I think that good physical therapists and being around other people that are having similar challenges, all of this makes him aware that he's not alone, number one. And number two, he can work through it. He can get through it. So I would encourage him to seek out support groups and physical therapists, people that have dealt with this before, and His is his own particular experience, but it will make a big difference in him as a person.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome, Pat. You have a wonderful evening now.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. This is Donna Sebo, and I know that we are out of time. Just a quick reminder for those of you in the state of Washington, Saturday, March 26th is the Emerald Spiral Expo at Kent Commons in Kent, Washington. I'm going to be appearing there, and I'll have a plethora of books that I'll be bringing that if you wanted to add some to your own personal library, there will be that opportunity. And I also will be doing many consultations for people. Remember always, you are the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. We all have a connection with every element in life, and what a joy to discover that we can make a difference by being true to ourselves and appreciating ourselves as people. Remember that as you go about your day-to-day. You're very special, and I'm so glad you joined us for this show today. We'll look forward to having you come with us again tomorrow, and we'll be sharing some wonderful things with you from A Virtuoso of Change. We'll be talking with you at the same time, same place tomorrow, right here on bbsradio.com. Donna Sebo here. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.